Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. This Wednesday, the first day of February 2017. I'm Crispin Mwakideo in Bonn.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwara from the social media desk.
Coming up, fresh fighting in South Sudan has led to more civilians fleeing their homes.
Well, right now, people are really moving out in big number. Children actually are even suffering. So the situation here is very worrying.
And the African Union cautiously backs a strategy to quit the International Criminal Court.
It's been in place for 12 years and has had 3 or 4 convictions. It spends $180 million per annum. This is totally incompetent.
And we'll also be hearing your comments on the AU's push to leave the ICC.
Stay tuned for these stories, plus Germany intensifies its fight against the so-called Islamic State. But before we get there, here's a chance to hear DW's World News.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. In Britain's lower house of parliament, Prime Minister Theresa May has been voicing criticism of the travel ban on people from mainly Muslim countries ordered by US President Donald Trump.
On the policy that President Trump has introduced, this government is clear that that policy is wrong. We wouldn't do it. In 6 years as Home Secretary, I never introduced such a policy. We believe it is divisive and wrong.
Separately, May told Parliament that the government will be publishing a white paper tomorrow setting out its plans to leave the European Union. Iran confirmed on Wednesday that it had tested a ballistic missile, but denied that it was in breach of its 2015 nuclear deal with world powers. The comments came from Defence Minister Hossein Dagan after a UN Security Council meeting to discuss the weekend test, which Washington described as absolutely unacceptable. The leaders of ethnically divided Cyprus have asked the United Nations to prepare for a new peace conference in early March, attended by the island's guarantor powers, Britain, Turkey and Greece. The foreign ministers of those three countries met Cypriot leaders in mid-January to discuss security guarantees, seen as crucial to any deal to reunite Cyprus. That meeting ended inconclusively. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Italy has set up a fund to help African countries better seal their borders in a bid to keep migrants from making the hazardous journey to Europe. Italian Foreign Minister Angelino Alfano announced the creation of the $200 million fund 2 days before European Union leaders meet on Malta to discuss their plan to stop African immigrants from arriving in Europe. South Africa's poultry industry says it's on the brink of collapse due to hotly denied accusations that the European Union is dumping cheap chicken in the country in a trade dispute. About 500 workers, former workers and company managers from the South African poultry sector marched on the EU headquarters in Pretoria on Wednesday, furious over cheap imports and mounting job losses. Senators in the Philippines have been giving varied reactions to a report by Amnesty International, which claims that the vast majority of the thousands of killings of poor suspects under President Rodrigo Duterte's anti-drug crackdown appear to be extrajudicial killings. Senator Richard Gordon said there was no evidence of government instructions on killing, but Senator Lila de Lima said it reflected real happenings in the war on drugs.
Me too have been receiving certain reports or information about that, that the police themselves are involved.
For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
You are listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideo.
And Wanjiko Mwaura.
From bad to worse, thousands of desperate South Sudanese civilians will have to wait indefinitely for humanitarian assistance after fighting forced the UN to suspend operations in Upper Nile area. The clashes were confirmed by both the rebels and the government, who accused each other of the latest flare-up. South Sudan plunged into a civil war following a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and his deputy Riek Machar. Tens of thousands have been killed and more than 3 million forced to flee. James Chimanyula reports.
The fresh fighting north of the capital Juba is taking place in Malakal, South Sudan's second largest city and the capital of the oil-rich Upper Nile region. Military sources say each side wants to capture and control Malakal, close to the country's northern border with Sudan. The fighting in Malakal has been confirmed by the United Nations and also by the Juba government military spokesman in the area, Colonel Santos Dominique Chuol. The information minister for Yei region explains more about the situation.
Two of the soldiers, the government actually, they are killed. But in the process, the people were repulsed and there was an arrest of their commander. So the commander is now under custody.
The commander that the government minister says is now under custody is the rebel commander fighting on behalf of rebel leader Riek Machar. So far, more than 20,000 villagers have abandoned their homes and crossed into neighboring Uganda to seek refuge, as the head of Kajokeji Episcopal Church, Emmanuel Marial, explains.
Right now, people are really moving out in big number. Children actually are even suffering. So the situation here is very worrying.
A rebel commander, Colonel William Gat Giath Deng, accused the government forces of plundering villages and raping women, among other crimes.
The government forces killing the innocent people, raping ladies, young ladies. So it's not true for the government forces to claim that the rebel forces are the one doing that. Not true.
That was Colonel William Gat Giath Deng, military commander representing rebel leader Riek Machar in the ongoing fighting in South Sudan's Kajokeji town in the newly established Yei region. The civil war in South Sudan has forced more than 3 million people to flee their homes and either seek refuge at safe United Nations camps or cross into neighboring Kenya and Uganda.
And that was a report by James Chimanyula. Let's return here to Germany, where 36-year-old Tunisian suspected of supporting and recruiting for the so-called Islamic State extremist group was arrested early Wednesday. German police carried out a total of 54 counter-terrorism raids in apartments, commercial properties and mosques as Berlin intensifies its fight against Islamic militant extremism. The country is still reeling from the December 19th Berlin attack at a Christmas market, which claimed the lives of 12 people. Daniel Pels has more on the story.
More than 1,000 police officers took part in an operation that began in the early hours of Wednesday morning. They searched 54 apartments, offices and mosques in Germany's western state of Hesse. The raids followed months of undercover investigations into a suspected network of Islamists, which is believed to consist of 16 people. Police arrested a 36-year-old Tunisian man who they say was the leader of the cell. Peter Beuth is the Minister for Internal Security in the state of Hesse.
Nach den bisherigen Erkenntnissen,
according to preliminary findings, this Salafist network planned a terror attack in Germany, but concrete plans or targets are not known at this stage. We managed to carry out a major preventive strike against a far-reaching Salafist network in Germany and Hesse.
Salafistisches Netzwerk in Deutschland und in Hessen gelungen.
Meanwhile, police in the capital Berlin arrested 3 suspected jihadists in a similar operation on Tuesday evening. A spokesman for the city's prosecutor told journalists they were planning to join Islamist fighters in Syria for military training. He said the 3 had links to a mosque in Berlin's Moabit area. Anis Amri, the Tunisian national who carried out the deadly assault on a Berlin Christmas market in December, visited the same mosque shortly before launching his attack.
DW Berlin correspondent Daniel Pels. And you're listening to Africa Link. Brexit is now history. Is Hexit the next? African leaders have reportedly adopted a strategy to quit the International Criminal Court. Several African countries, led by Kenya and Sudan, have accused the Hague-based court of unfairly focusing on Africa while turning a blind eye to the rest of the world. Coletta Onjoy reports from Addis Ababa, seat of the African Union, where the strategy was adopted behind closed doors.
The decision is believed to have been pushed by countries like South Africa, Burundi, Ethiopia, and Sudan. Dr. Hussein Kharshoum is the Sudan's Secretary of Economics and Development Affairs.
You have to strengthen the African Court for Justice and to call for every African state to ratify the African Justice Court because as a court of the last resort. The second thing, to strengthen the judicial system at domestic level because ICC is not taking all the steps.
Some countries like Nigeria, Senegal, Ghana, and the Democratic Republic of Congo still support the court. But Uganda, which has sent signals of withdrawing from the court on different occasions, has now, through its Foreign Affairs Minister Sam Kutesa, threatened to withdraw from the court if it does not reform.
We also believe that it needs to improve its working methods. It's been in place for 12 years and has had 3 or 4 convictions. It spends $180 million per annum. This is totally incompetent, so we have got strong views on it.
The summit had planned to have deliberations on ICC with the United Nations Security Council. However, representatives of the Security Council were dismissed because of being of low level.
Coletta Wanjohi in Addis Ababa. And now we are back to the social media desk.
Indeed, Crispin, and getting right into it, we have comments on the African Union report that we just ran.
If you're just joining us, African Union leaders are backing ICC withdrawal by member states.
Yes, and Prudence Reza Ulla says that plan is not a bad one. It might help African countries become independent, but it can only work if all the leaders have an interest in developing Africa. We also have another comment coming in from Leticia Alphonse, who says, if they don't think the ICC is fair, then they should leave. But if they do, African leaders should not oppress their citizens.
Well, that is Leticia Alphonse's comment.
And quite strong. We also have another comment from Charles Kumolu, who disagrees. He says it's not a good idea for the continent to leave the ICC. And Frank Emmanuel also seems to agree with him and says, I don't think leaving the ICC will empower the African Court on Human and People's Rights to deal with leaders that violate human rights. It will only lead to more oppression of citizens by African leaders.
And just to bring you up to speed, the African Court on Human and People's Rights was established in 1987 to protect and uphold human rights.
However, one of the challenges that the court has been facing is the will of African states to support this continental judicial body.
Right, and we should monitor this story and see how it unfolds in the long run. What else are people saying about this withdrawal from the ICC?
Yeah, we have a comment here from Titus Glavy, who says, I think it's a good idea insofar as the Western powers haven't been held to account for their actions ever. For example, he gives an example of Libya there. We have another person called Godwin Kasimba from Malawi who says, it's true that the ICC court only targets African leaders, so leaving is a good thing. I'm sure the African Court on Human Rights and People's Rights will work effectively. Kipindu Njama says, I support the move by the AU. Why hasn't the ICC prosecuted Western leaders that have attacked many countries? Bonge says, they have taken too long to make this move. Crispin, as you can see from these comments, lots of the people seem to think that the ICC actually targets African countries. And to be quite honest, the ICC has taken to trial several African cases, so they might have a reason to think this way.
That's right, Wanjiku. We've spoken to many experts, and most of them agree that the court has somehow focused a lot on Africa and ignored the West. They always mention, you know, the former president of the US, George Bush, or the former prime minister of the UK, Tony Blair, and accused the court of ignoring the crimes that were committed by these countries in countries like Iraq or in Afghanistan during the wars.
Indeed.
And at the same time, I think it's also good for African leaders to look at their judicial systems and ask themselves whether they can really try crimes of humanity and war crimes. And if not, then I think at the same time, those who are propagating for remaining in the ICC also have a point.
Yes, indeed. And you know what? You can also join in the discussion on our Facebook page. That's DW Africa.
Right, Wanjiku, let's leave it at that. You are listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu.
And Wanjiko Mwaura.
And coming up in the next quarter of an hour, poultry farmers in South Africa protest against chicken dumping by the European Union.
We are a waste dump for Europe's leftovers, and that's a terrible thing to be. We're a developing part of the world. We don't want to be anybody's waste dump, so it's harming the South African industry.
And excitement for football lovers as the AFCON semi-finals kick off in Gabon.
Which team are you rooting for tonight? Continue commenting on our Facebook page and we'll be talking about that later.
Do stay with us for these stories and more. But let's first begin with the chicken wars. Hundreds of South African poultry farm workers took to the streets on Wednesday to protest against dumped chicken surplus. They say chicken imported largely from the EU, US and Brazil could cause massive loss of jobs by the end of the year and the collapse of the country's chicken industry. The EU, however, denied the accusations, saying the industry was using it as a scapegoat for its domestic production problems. Tuzo Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Hundreds of workers in the chicken industry protested at the European Union embassy in Pretoria on Wednesday. They accused the EU member countries of causing job losses in the country through these cheap chicken cuts exports that have choked the local industry. According to the South African Poultry Association, SAPA, the country's poultry industry will collapse in the near future if cheap chicken imports are not controlled. Statistics from SAPA show that 30,000 tons of these chicken imports enter South Africa every month. Kevin Lovell, chief executive officer at SAPA, warns that for every 10,000 tons imported, up to 1,000 jobs could be lost.
We are a waste dump for Europe's leftovers. And that's a terrible thing to be. We're a developing part of the world. We don't want to be anybody's waste dump. So it's harming the South African industry. Essentially, all of our trouble is because of the EU, not anybody else. Don't blame the Brazilians. Don't blame the Americans. Accept that this is an EU problem caused by the EU.
However, David Hulpet, chief executive officer of the Association of Meat Importers and Exporters, argues that these imports are genuine and necessary.
I agree that we can't have a free-for-all and become a dumping ground, but we've always disputed the fact that imports are being dumped into South Africa. We've continuously heard about lower prices of imports as opposed to local products, but that fact has never been proved to us. Our figures show that imported product has always been more expensive than the local equivalents.
The government has increased tariffs on EU chicken-borne imports to 14%, but the industry says this has not helped. Lovell warns that a lot of companies in the industry continue closing down. He says the effects of these imports are also causing havoc in the agriculture industry that produces the chicken feeds.
The best solution for us, actually, is that the developed world acknowledges that it's fine for their consumers to have dietary preferences, but it's wrong for the consequence of those preferences to be export. That is the best solution. If there was a lawful ban, we would obviously support it.
Lovell says if nothing is done to stop the imports, the country could kiss goodbye to the local chicken industry by Christmas this year, leaving over 1 million workers and their dependents without food or income.
DW correspondent Tuzo Kumalo reporting in Johannesburg. And this news just in, an armed group attacked a UN technical team working along the border between Nigeria and Cameroon, killing 5 people and wounding several, the United Nations Office for West Africa has just reported. And still to come, all roads lead to Libreville as the semi-finals of the AFCON tournament kick off.
Living Planet Africa.
Over 17 million people at the Horn of Africa face a food crisis as a result of severe drought. That's according to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO. Drought has also hit South Africa, with experts warning that Cape Town residents have less than 100 days of water supply left. As Glenys Crook reports, there is a real concern that Cape Town may run out of water if the rains don't come soon enough.
It's another day of temperatures in the 30s here in Cape Town, with the southeasterly wind blowing hard across the peninsula. The air feels as dry as the city's mountain vegetation and gardens look, People are worried about water.
Water is life. Don't let our future dry up. It's up to each one of us to take action now.
But despite constant public reminders to save water, like this one from local radio station Smile, Cape Townians are simply failing to comply. Restrictions which came into effect in November require everyone to reduce water usage by 30%. This week, authorities said dams had dropped to below 40% capacity, down from over 55 in November. At the University of Cape Town, urban water specialist Dr. Kevin Winter says it will be very serious if the rains don't come by the end of March.
We will have to start looking to other contingency plans. It's highly possible that we will start pumping water from the ground and have to distribute it, and it may have to be distributed via trucks to various centres around the city. That's how it's been happening in other parts of the country that have experienced similar drought conditions over the last 2 or 3 years, and maybe this is Cape Town's turn. We're going to have to do something very similar.
Most of us take access to running water for granted. A recent day without it, following a burst pipe in my neighbourhood, made me realise just how often I turn on my taps. But what's even more worrying is that if the city does run dry, not having water will be far from our only problem. The region produces big agricultural commodities such as grapes, a variety of deciduous fruit like apples and peaches, wheat, canola, and livestock. Several years of insufficient rain have resulted in food prices increasing way above the official inflation rate. And this is likely to get worse, says Carl Opperman, the CEO of the farmers' organization Agri Western Cape, as the drought is in its second year.
That is the reason why our dams are so low. That is also the reason that our boreholes is also suffering at this point in time, and that water is basically one of the most scarce commodities. On the very short term, you've got to minimize your losses. You've got to see what you can save. And if we're going to take one step further, is to say, what is your next production processes to take it further? Because you must remember, the agriculture in South Africa is the foundation of our economy. So the crisis on hand is not a farming crisis alone. It's a crisis for the value chain and the population of South Africa.
As the farmers pray for rain, some Cape Townians are rushing out to buy bottles of water before their price soars.
Glenys Crook in Cape Town.
On the spot.
Only two steps away from African glory. This thought must be going through the minds of the four remaining teams at the AFCON 2017 football tournament. Burkina Faso is today playing seven-time winner Egypt in the first semi-final, while Ghana and Cameroon meet on Thursday in a repeat of the 2008 semi-final. From Libreville, Mark Meadows has this report, read by Isaac Mugabe.
Despite lack of infrastructure compared to the likes of Egypt and fellow semi-finalists Ghana and Cameroon, the Stallions of Burkina Faso finished fourth in this tournament in 1998 after losing to the Egyptians. They then surprised everyone by becoming runners-up in the 2013 edition after losing to Nigeria's Super Eagles. This time, the Burkinabes are aiming for glory after going undefeated so far in the stifling heat at the 2017 AFCON Championship in Gabon. Sore Hamado, who along with over 100 other fans has been sent to Gabon as part of an official supporters club, says everything is possible.
We are going to win against Egypt. I have been praying every day and we will win.
In the last eight, Burkina Faso beat Tunisia 2-0, a comfortable win that enabled it to qualify for the semifinals. They accomplished this feat despite the absence of one of their top players, Jonathan Petroipa. Staying humble is the key to Burkina Faso's success, says Portuguese coach Paulo Duarte. He attributes the team's progress to outstanding teamwork.
It is a semi-final. It is special for me, but it is a collective work, not an individual mission. We have convinced the public that we have quality and we can win matches. We still have humility in our own team, and this gives us the willingness to go further and further.
However, Duarte warns that they need to be wary of the Pharaohs, the name of the Egyptian team, who are a record 7 times winners of the tournament.
But we come up against a very strong opponent, the strongest in the history of this competition. The maturity and capacity to control a match is there among the Egypt side.
Talking of maturity, there is no one in the Egypt side more experienced than goalkeeper Essam El Hadri. He is the oldest player ever to play in the tournament at 44 years. The experienced goalkeeper says he tries to inspire the team.
This new generation is still young and haven't experienced winning an African Nations Cup. I tell them about our previous success and how we managed to do it.
The weight of expectations from Burkina Faso fans is also immense, that nothing is certain.
That report was written by Mark Meadows in Libreville. And now on social radio, we hear your opinions on the topics we have been covering so far.
Yes, and just like we had promised before, we have more of your comments on our hot topic for the day, the AU backing a strategy to leave the International Criminal Court. We have a comment coming in from Anas Awudu, who says, I strongly support the withdrawal of the African Union from the ICC, but the AU should have an alternative for the continent to tackle all crimes committed by fellow heads of states and other surrogates without favor. Another comment coming in from Matic James says, they want to stay in power without anybody to ask them. You too can join in the discussion on our DW Africa Facebook page. Now, earlier this week, we covered the story of the Cameroon beauty queen, Julie Franklin, whose crown was stripped off for involving herself in what the organizers of Miss Cameroon selection called unprofessional activities.
Yes, she has visited DW correspondent Moki Kinzeka in Yaoundé.
And she had this message. No journalist, not even one, came to me to get my own version of the story until you came. They went reporting the version of those who dismissed me, and no one cared to ask for my point of view. Your effort to meet me indicates how there's still professional journalists in Cameroon. I'm grateful.
Well, that's a very, very good compliment coming in from the Miss Cameroon of Cameroon.
Yes, indeed. And of course, this is something that we do with our stories. We let you tell the stories and the stories that matter to you.
Exactly. Right. And we still have this match, Burkina Faso, which is a hot semi-final between Burkina Faso and Egypt. And they're all playing to get into the finals of the AFCON. Wanjiku, which team are you rooting for?
Oh, well, I think I'm rooting for Burkina Faso.
Are you?
Yes, but only because the Egyptian team, the Pharaohs, have been at the 7-time winner. So I think it's
I don't think that's a good reason enough to support.
I think it's a good reason. I'm rooting for Burkina Faso, and I think they can win. They have a good coach, and well, let's see what they do tonight, you know?
Indeed, let's see. I'm supporting the team that wins.
Oh, come on.
Either Egypt
choose
or
one. Pick a side, Christine.
Well, I support Ghana.
Okay, that's the match that's coming up tomorrow. But tonight, we have Burkina Faso. And although my team didn't qualify, which is the Kenyan team, I am rooting for Burkina Faso, you know? And we have other people that feel indifferently, Crispin, about the AFCON, even as it comes to an end. For example, Massim from South Africa says, without our national team, I hardly follow AFCON and I've got no favourites because I don't think they're great players anymore to follow. Well, that's Massim from South Africa. And Christian Peter says, this year's AFCON has produced some shocking results for me. The team I support, which is DRC, is no more. So let any side win. See, Crispin, you need to choose another team for today's game.
I have my favorite, Ghana. I'm still voting for Ghana, and I hope that they win the trophy.
Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see about that. The last comment is from Charles Capone, who says, many peeps have predicted a Burkina Faso victory in today's game, and I hope it happens. Yes, indeed, Burkina Faso.
Well, all the best to the best team. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for your comments. And remember, you can still comment on these and more stories on our Facebook Africa page. I'm Crispin Mwakidale.
And Wanjiku Mwaura. Bye and take care.